Anyone missing? Anyone not have the English? Okay. Okay, so that's what I want, because I don't want to make a million copies. You can pass around. That's why I give it to people that want to see the Hebrew. Okay. Okay, if someone else come. You need two more?
No.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you everyone for coming. This is a very timely topic. In a couple of ways. First of all, we started a program with an organization called, what's it called? Shamayim.
Shamayim.
They're an animal advocacy group. And they promote vegan, plant-based diets. And they've sponsored about nine food events. We should have served, donuts here. It's kind of an event.
We
could call that anyway. Yeah. So they're promoting plant-based eating for many reasons. There's many good reasons to go plant-based. Miriam and I have gone plant-based, almost plant-based. We're not there yet. We started about 8 years ago, and we're well on our way. We're almost vegan. That's what I call myself, almost vegan. We decide we're not eating eggs, we're not eating dairy, except someone gives us, maybe gives us a challah, so we'll not eat it, but we'll try not to buy it. And there's many, we spoke on Shabbos about a couple of the reasons, but tonight we're gonna talk about one of the hot topics of today, which is impossible pork. So everyone knows, I'm sure everyone has seen the news articles that reported that the OU had decided not to give a hechsher to impossible pork. The reason they cited it was not because of halachic reasons, but because of the fact that many of the consumers would become upset about the fact you see an OU in a package next to the word pork. They don't like that. And there are many Muslim groups who also give kosher or halal certifications who agreed with this position. There's actually an article written in one of the local news, in the local newspaper, that was taken up by the Jerusalem Post. They basically said that they gave this complicated reason why they think the OU is completely correct and it shouldn't be kosher. Something about modern technology and how things need to be everything can't be updated to modern times. They have to live in the past. I'm not sure what that means. I really had a hard time understanding the point of the article, but the point I would like to focus on, and it's a very important idea, is that there are many issues that are brought up around kashrus, but the one thing that has to be focused on first is whether the item is kosher according to Jewish law or not. That's really the first thing you got to find out. You want to start adding things, you say you can't have mixed dancing at the restaurant, you don't want to have non-Jewish music at the restaurant, whatever you want to say. Those are nothing to do with kosher. The main thing we want to find out whether this is kosher. And there's two issues, I think, that are major issues that are involved with impossible pork. One is to determine whether the ingredients are kosher and the process in which the food is made is kosher. That's one. And the other one is something called marasayin. Marasayin, which is if someone does an act that looks like they're doing a sin, doing something wrong, is that problematic? So if it looks like you're eating pork, it says pork on the package, and you take it out and it looks like pork, what you're eating is pork. And that would apply to cheeseburgers too. That would apply to a lot of other foods. So whether or not we have to be concerned about the fact that the item looks like you're doing something wrong. So the first source I brought was just for the ingredients. And I'm not gonna speak a lot about the ingredients and the process because I spoke about this many times in the past. We'll have sure many times in the future. But tonight I just wanna focus on marasayin. But the one thing I wanna get out of the way is that we always say, we explain that even though people are really serious about hechsherim, serious about having kosher supervision, and for good reason, it's very, very important with the work that the kosher agencies do, most foods really do not need a hechsher nowadays. Doesn't mean you shouldn't have one. In my Pesach book, I write, you can have it without a hechsher, but if you have the ability to buy food with a hechsher, you should. It's definitely better to buy with a hechsher. But the question is whether it's kosher or not. There's very strong arguments we made that it's definitely kosher without a hechsher, based on the ingredients. But that also means, by the way, you have to know what every ingredient is. But in plant-based foods, there's very few things that would be problematic, if at all. one thing that might be problematic is something like grape juice or wine, wine vinegar or something like that, which in most instances is not a problem either. But that's the one thing that you find an issue with plant-based foods. So why can you rely on the ingredients? How do you know the guy's telling the truth? So one major source for this, and this is brought in the Shach and the Taz in Yoredeya, but this is a source from Or Chaim, from Hilchos Tzitzis. Anyone please read number one? Go ahead.
One who buys a talit with tzitzit on it from a Jew or from a non-Jewish merchant,
right, he interrupts the Shulchan Aruch statement.
Oh, excuse me.
So he puts in a clause.
And he says that he bought it from a Jew, and he's believed.
It's the Mukat Yosef, whatever. That's the source.
It is valid. Because since he's a merchant, there's a presumption that he's telling the truth, and that he bought it from a Jew because he wouldn't harm himself and ruin his career by lying to customers. But if one bought it from a non-Jew who was not a merchant, it is invalid.
So we see from here that amazing halacha, that Shulchan Aruch says if you see a non-Jewish person selling tzitzis, you could assume it's kosher. Now, you know what that means, it's kosher, not the ingredients are kosher. This is much worse than the ingredients. You assume that he bought it from a Jew who had the intent when he made this tzitzis to be kosher tzitzis. He's doing it for the sake of, shame mitzvah tzitzis, for the sake of mitzvah tzitzis. So it's incredible, you believe it's not, he doesn't even know if the guy had intent. But he bought it from a person that is reliable enough to rely on him that he made the tzitzis lishma, for the right intent. So that's what we're relying on, that the non-Jew bought it from, and the reason is because if he would lie about this, he would be caught, and if he would be caught, he would go out of business. So this is a very interesting source of this halacha. That means nowadays, I think it applies so much more than this, even though there are many, much discussion about this halacha, how exactly we interpret it. But you see that this is the clear source of the halacha that says that called Uman Lo Mar Nafsha, that a business person does not want to ruin his own livelihood, harm himself. And the way nowadays that it's interpreted, if someone writes ingredients on a package, so Moshe Feinstein says this about milk. He says by milk, that if milk doesn't have a hechsher, it's still considered Chalav Yisrael, he says. Why? Because nowadays no one would lie and sell camel milk or pig's milk when they're under the guise of cow's milk, right? So think about this. This is a direct biblical prohibition. And he was asked, Rav Moshe, well, the FDA only gives a $75 fine for someone who violates this. So he said, that's enough. I mean, because really the truth is he's saying this, I think, because if people found out about it, even the FDA doesn't do anything about it, they're not going to buy milk from this company anymore. So that's all the more so with vegans, that vegans nowadays are very vigilant. And if they find out that you put meat into Impossible Pork, that's only one of many reasons, but that would fall in this category, yes.
I'm not challenging the Shulchan Aruch, but I think we can all think of instances where the company did lie, and they lied for short-term profit. Their reputation may have taken a hit, maybe it recovered, maybe it doesn't, but it does happen that people lie, but companies lie about ingredients, they lie about safety,
yeah.
and bad things happen. And you know,
so they,
and like you know, Boeing has taken a big hit. We now know internally they knew darn well that plane was not safe, but
so,
they
yeah.
did.
Yeah. So they say the same thing about the vaccine. People are saying that since Pfizer is not culpable,
Oxycontin,
right, for the vaccine, if something goes wrong because the government gave immunity. So therefore, you can't take the vaccine. That's what some rabbis were saying. To me, it was ridiculous. The reason it's ridiculous is because, yeah, it's true, you're right, there are people who cheat. There was another scandal, which is much worse. There was a scandal a number of years ago, I think it was in the 80s, where there was a company, there was a whole operation where they were selling tilapia, sea bass, under the guise that it was sturgeon. It was really sturgeon, they sell it as sea bass. So the OU goes around with these speeches saying, you see, you can't rely on a merchant when it comes to fish. And this is a very, very big misnomer, very misleading. The reason is because the obligation in halacha is not to determine with 100% certainty that this is kosher, that this is the ingredients are kosher, that these tzitzis are kosher. The intent of the halacha is that there's a majority of cases that it's going to be kosher. The majority, we say, majority, it's the whole thing. So if you have a majority of a minion, let's say, so there are 10 people davening, it's 4 people left. you can still continue to finish a davening because the majority of the whole thing now, there's only four, only six people here. Doesn't matter. So that's considered a majority. For another example, they say Rov Kos. Someone drinks on a Pesach. The obligation to drink the entire cup. So drink 51%. It's like the whole thing. If you have a mixture of food, non-kosher food, kosher food, and or slaughter an animal, 51% is cut. It's cut. 50. Right. You need to cut the whole thing. But it's like the whole thing's cut. Same thing. You see these millions of places in Allah. So really the truth is that the constant majority, or even not majority, the vast majority, which is even better, which is really the case in this situation. In most cases, it's not going to happen. There's no guarantees in life. But halacha doesn't require a guarantee that this is not kosher. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
What if it's well known that there's fraud within the industry? So for instance, I'm thinking olive oil, where everybody, pretty well known within the food industry that olive oil is cut with other things. Cut with other oils, typically to the point where, like, if you're buying Trader Joe's olive oil, they buy from their manufacturer, and it's already removed enough that they don't know. But I'm pretty positive that, or I believe that people are lenient when it comes to extra virgin olive oil, whether it has a hasher or not. And so, where does that lie in all that?
So if you only hold an extra virgin olive oil as kosher, then you have a problem. But the truth is that most vegetable oils are kosher. If you're afraid that animal oil went in there, that's something else. Then there will be a problem. But if it's just vegetable oil, then it's not going to be an issue halachically in terms of kosher. But that's really a determinant. You're right. If it's not a majority, not a serious majority of cases where it's kosher food, it's kosher, then you shouldn't rely on that. So it depends on the situation. But I really doubt that they mix animal oil into that. Highly doubt that. Right, safflower is kosher. So the only problem is if you're olive oil purist, so then you have an issue.
You can use olive oil if it's like, for instance, they use the grapeseed oil, for instance?
Grapeseed oil is kosher. Well, everything's kosher, yes.
What if it was something that was more like if there was like rampant fish fraud, like, I know there was like some article in the New York Times at some point or whatever about like most of a lot of tuna is not really tuna, and a lot of, you know, going back, like, it's pretty well known that a lot of fish get mixed up, and if people don't even necessarily mean to be misleading, but a lot of times it's not what they think it is. But if that's, like, so well known, for example, like, all the articles you're talking about at the time, would it be bad to have, would that tip, would there be a point in which it tips something below the 51% mark?
Yes, I think that's a very good point. But the thing is that's what they say like this. They say in the 80s, there was this case where sea bass was switched for surgeries of sea bass. And there's tons of cases with mixed fish. So you can't have it. It's misleading. Because every other case was kosher fish for another kosher fish. It's very hard to switch a non-kosher fish for a kosher fish. There's some opinions that hold surgeries is also kosher, by the way. It's very hard to find the case. It's almost impossible to find the case where they're going to mix octopus or eel or some other fish not kosher with another. So the fact is that if they switched it, it's not going to be not kosher. It's the same thing with the olive oil. So that's something that they don't tell you. They leave that part out because they, I mean, I don't want to be cynical. So I am cynical, but I don't want to be that cynical. But the fact is that they conveniently leave that out because it misleads people to thinking that they're eating not kosher fish. It's not kosher. But let's say if you go to a nice sushi place, for example, you don't have to have a heksher on the item. First of all, salmon is, Moshe already says salmon, you can tell salmon by the color. And tuna fish is also by the color, is red. It's very hard to switch those two fish. And all the white fishes, you can rely, if it's a nice restaurant, it's a dingy restaurant, then I won't rely on it because they are switching fish. But a nice restaurant, well, their reputation's on the line, they won't switch a sea bass out for non-kosher fish or another fish even. Okay, so now we're gonna get into Marasayan. So Marasayan, Marasayan, sorry, is regarding the case of there's a few sources in Chazal for Marasayan. Marasayan has to do with if someone sees you doing something that's not okay. Now, why is that a problem? So let's first see the sources. So someone read number two. Basically, number two, I'll summarize something. Number two, has to do with when a Jew goes into the treasury of the Beit HaMikdash, they're not allowed to go with hems or any pockets, because they'll be suspected of taking money out. Right, and it says, "And she be guiltless before the Lord and before Israel." V'yisim nikim Hashem Yisrael. That's a pasuk in Parshas Matos that says that a person has to be clean in the eyes of God and man. So that implies that clean in the eyes of God as a man implies that bar sign, that person shouldn't do something that someone will suspect them of something wrong. We'll see. There's other reasons why. Another reason why you can't do it also. You can't do that also. But it is also a very good question whether the V'yisim nikim, this verse, is separate from bar sign. There's three different ideas important in Chazal. One's called Ma'aser Sinai, means you're doing something that looks bad. It looks to the eye like you're doing something wrong. Second case is Vishim Nikim. They should be clean in the eyes of God and Israel, which seems like something different. It's saying that not only should you not do something that looks bad, you should always be clean in the eyes of God. You shouldn't even come close to suspecting that you're doing something wrong. And the third case is Chashda. Chashda means that someone suspects you of something. Now, there are different Gemaras which bring different sources bring each one of these ideas. But it's not clear that they're different. So we're going to go on the assumption that they're all similar, the same idea, which is that you do something that appears like you're doing something wrong. And because this case, if you think about it, going into the Gizbar with pockets doesn't mean you're doing something wrong. No, there's just someone's going to suspect you of doing something wrong, but you didn't do anything that looks bad. But so it could be it's a different case, but we're going to assume it's all the same. Now, the case in Shulchan Aruch that's brought about food, which is comparable to our case, is number three. Someone please want to read number three?
Fish blood, although it is permissible if gathered in a container, is forbidden on account of looking bad. Thus, if it is apparent that it is from fish, for instance, if there are scales in it, it is permitted.
Okay, so this is the source in Shulchan Aruch. For one of the sources of Ma'aser Sinai, this is a case of someone drinking, I don't know why someone's drinking fish blood out of a cup. That's what they're doing, and it looks like they're drinking blood. So they say you have to put scales inside. That's a famous case. So the Ramah brings in Hilchos Basa B'Chalav, so another famous case. Some please read number four.
Ramah, we make milk from almonds and place bird meat in it. Since milk and bird meat is only rabbinically forbidden, but with meat from a domesticated animal, place almonds next to the milk, so that people don't misunderstand. This is, as we said above in chapter
6. Which has to do with the fish. So the Ramah compares the case of fish to milk meat. And we'll see there's a lot of nuances here. One of the things is he says that it doesn't apply to rabbinical prohibition, which is very strange. I mean, you're allowed to look like you're doing a rabbinical prohibition wrong, not a biblical prohibition. So we'll see where that comes to play in halacha. But you see over here that if you cook, well, he doesn't say cook also, by the way, which is another problem. But assuming you cook milk and meat, almond milk with regular meat, regular cattle, whatever, a beef, or something that's midoraisa, biblically prohibited. So you have to put almonds next to the milk to make it look like you make sure people know you're not cooking milk and meat. Now the question also is why that would help, because we'll see that here in the next one read. So we'll see that there's a case if it's indoors, no one's looking at you, still not permitted. So some say that doesn't help to put almonds next to milk. So why the Ramah says you need almonds will help you. Someone read number five, please. These are the two reasons from Rashi. Two reasons why Ma'aser Sinai would be prohibited.
Whenever the sages prohibited something because of Marit Ayin, is because the person who sees him will suspect him of violating a transgression.
Okay, so that's Rashi and Avodah Zarah. Ed, you want to read number six?
Fish blood was placed in a vessel. It would be prohibited because it might be used for animal blood, and the bystander might conclude that it is permissible to eat blood.
So you see, there's two different reasons. One is that the person will think he's violating something. The other one is to think that the person will be allowed to eat meat. So those are the two problems we have over here. One is that you're doing something wrong. Second is that the guy's going to think he's allowed to do what you're doing wrong. Okay, so number seven speaks about the innermost changes. So whenever the sage is prohibited, actually due to the appearance of a prohibition, even the innermost change where no one will see it is prohibited. When put him in action because of maritime, that seems to be a different circumstance. It's prohibited form of action in all cases. So we see, Gemara in Shabbos says, there's another monkey wrench into this, that says, no matter what you do, you can't get out of it. Maritime is maritime. So we have to understand why we see different approaches to maritime and what how do we categorize them. So the last thing before we get into that is the Rambam. The Rambam says, someone read number eight, Rambam says, explains that everyone's a don, everyone, Don Kol on the Chavs Chos. You have to don everyone for, judge everyone for positive. You know, it's in a positive light. Look at everyone in a positive light. It's a very, very important Rambam. So I want to read that. Number eight.
And judge every person as meritorious. When there is a person whom you do not about, you do not know, I guess,
know about him,
if he is righteous or wicked, and you see him doing an act or saying something, and if you interpret in one way, it'll be good, and if you interpret in another way, it'll be bad. In this case, take it to the good and do not think bad about it. And you may not suspect him. And about this, did they say, anyone who suspects proper ones will be struck. But when he is not known and the deed is indeterminate towards one of the two extremes, according to the ways of piety, one must judge a person as meritorious toward whichever extreme of the two extremes would be the case.
So if that's it, the case, so it's very hard to understand why there's even halacha of marasayin, according to the opinion that says the reason is because we're afraid you're doing something wrong. If you're doing something wrong, you have to see something, doing something right. If you see, you have to look at someone else, judge them meritoriously. So we'll see. I think there's basically a way to approach this, which becomes clear that there's basically three different reasons why we allow a case of marasayin that seems to be marasayin. So the first approach is the pre-chadash. Yichadish is taking the approach of the Rosh and the Rashba. Even though the Rosh and Rashba don't necessarily say this directly, but they both say that you're not allowed to add on to Zeris. That means if the rabbis gave us a certain number of injunctions that are prohibited, things are prohibited, and we're not allowed to add to that. Now, if we could say it's under the same umbrella, like we could say, lighting an electric oven is the same as lighting a fire, but that's not adding a new prohibition. That's saying that existing prohibition applies nowadays. But to add new prohibition is prohibited. You can't do it. You can't add things. You know, Sosifa, we can't add on to the Torah. So you can't add on injunctions once the sages are finished. So this is a pre-Chadash approach to Marasayin. This is a very important distinction he makes. So someone read number nine, please.
We cannot place injunctions or create prohibitions on our own regarding Marasayin beyond what is elucidated in the Talmud.
So this is a very interesting approach. This approach says that if it doesn't say it in the Talmud, there's no marasayin, which is not a problem, even if it looks bad. Because we don't create a new situation where you can't do something. So it's interesting to note that one of the things that's said in the Talmud is you can't hang clothing on Shabbos that it's when they're wet to dry, as if it looks like you're laundering. So that's something that I always tell people. People ask me about marasayin, that's one thing I say, you should try to avoid that, because that's straight in the Gemara. And the fish blood case is also straight in the Gemara. So we'll see that the crazy place you learn is that the fish case, blood case, is a general case of food, and therefore anything under that under the category would apply as well.
But that apply, by the way, to hang, you're done using a dish towel and you hang it back up and it dries?
So what I think is the Gemara is saying is that it looks like it's laundered. You laundered. In other words, you did it, you hung it up in a way that looks like you laundered, but if you do that's every day, so that's not considered prohibition of hanging. Like if you have a laundry rack, you know, those laundry racks or laundry pole, what are they called? The wires, what are they?
Yeah, the dryer rack.
Right, exactly. Okay, so that's one approach to, so according to that, it would seem that impossible pork is okay, but we'll see that the Jonas Eibschitz says, Jonas and Eibschitz takes this to a point where it might apply. Someone read number 10, please.
The sages only prohibited fish blood because it is actual blood that the Torah permits. This is also the case with mother's milk. But do you think almond milk is actual milk? It is a fruit that only because in liquid form looks like milk, we refer to it with the borrowed term milk. Also, it would be prohibited to put very red wine into a cooked dish.
Because red wine looks like blood, he says. So that he, obviously, you could put with wine. So this is a controversy that just happened, that the milk companies, dairy companies sued the plant-based companies because they used the term milk and meat and all these terms. So Eibschitz basically agrees with them. He says, if it's almond milk, it's not really milk. He agrees with the plant-based companies. Obviously, not really. No one's really going to think this is milk. Everyone knows it's not milk. So therefore, it's not. So even though food applies, fish blood would apply to other foods, but it doesn't apply to things that are fake. They're not real. So this is a second approach, basically saying that even if there is myrcene by food, it wouldn't apply to plant-based goods, food, especially by milk because we know if they're fake, they're fake. They're an extension of that. Yes.
So would this change at all with what becomes commonly known? Like, I don't know people who drink fish blood. So if I saw a cup of fish blood, I might think it was actually.
So that's
blood.
I think.
But almond milk is now so common, I would just assume it was not real milk.
So that's what I'm going to get to next. That's the main reason I think is that this is okay.
Or coffee creamer, part of coffee creamer.
Yes.
It used to be, there's a BOU article that it used to be, and I'm old. I remember this that you couldn't put it in a pitcher. You had to put the richest container on the table, which stressed my mother to no end.
That's right. No, so that's a good question. Exactly.
The article said that the article about BOU said the BOU put out said nowadays we don't. Everyone knows people use Rich's creamer and other.
Right. So that's what we're gonna get to next. That's the main reason I think. So in 11 and 12, because 11 and 12 is the source of this halacha.
The only mixture that creates the prohibition of kilayim is sheep and lamb's wool with flax. And the sages prohibited.
Does everyone know what kilayim is, by the way? Shatnez. Shatnez is when you have mixed, you sew together wool and linen. So the Shulchan Aruch says only sheep's wool and lamb's wool together with flax. Mm-hmm. That's shatnez. But if something looks like flax, that's what he's going to get to. If it looks like flax, then he's going to say whether it's a problem or not.
And the sages prohibited, because of Marat Ayin, to mix silk with wool, because silk is similar to flax. But nowadays, where silk is commonly found in our region and everyone recognizes it, there's no prohibition of Marat Ayin, and it is permissible to mix it with wool or flax.
Okay, someone read number 12.
The wool of a sheep born from a goat is prohibited to mix with flax because of Marat Ayin. Haga.
That's the Ramah. That means the Ramah is commenting.
Prohibited to sew a nylon garment under a wool garment in a place where nylon is not commonly found because of Marat Ayin. Two are quoting the Rosh. But in a place where it is commonly found, it is permissible.
So we see from here that both the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, I quoted the second one just for Ashkenazim, but the Ramah also says this, that if it's a place where it's common, everyone knows that this is not a problem. Like everyone knows that silk is not flax. Or what's the second case? Nylon is not flax. Everyone knows that, so then it's not a problem. So this is the source. What you're saying about the OU was saying that So for instance, when Moshe Feinstein said a long time wrote a tshuva, he said a person's not allowed to walk into McDonald's in a rest stop because maybe someone's going to think he's doing something wrong. He's eating treif. And he also says in Shuva that you can't have timers on Shabbos because people are going to think you're turning your lights on and off on Shabbos. However, he changed his mind since then because this is back in the 50s when no one knew about timers and no one knew about McDonald's. So nowadays, McDonald's, you can buy plant-based burger McDonald's even now, perhaps now. So I used to tell people that if you eat a soy cheeseburger at McDonald's, that's a problem because it looks like you're doing something wrong. But if you walk into McDonald's, when you're going to the bathroom, maybe buying a Coke, that's another reason. But nowadays, people know that people go to McDonald's for all different reasons. And nowadays, even that people know that kosher food, isn't even kosher food to buy at McDonald's. So therefore, myrcene would, even though it applied 50, 60 years, 70 years ago, won't apply today because of this reason, because things have changed. That, I think, applies to all plant-based foods. Nowadays, everyone knows about plant-based foods. Even if some people don't, most people do. So if someone sees you eating a cheeseburger, there's no reason to keep the cheese package on the table because they're probably thinking you're eating a plant-based burger with a plant-based cheese. So there's not even meat or dairy here. So therefore, that I think is the main reason today why myrcene wouldn't apply. Even if myrcene does apply, it doesn't apply. You know, these are cases. They're saying even if myrcene does apply, even in the case of Nana Gemara, even if it applies, if similar to food, but even all these cases, it does apply, won't apply today because of the fact that everyone knows it. And if you just look at the pre-Torah, the last one, someone read number 13.
It's, yeah. It seems that in any situation where there is a concern of Mara Zion that can be corrected without a problem, it is better to correct it accordingly. But if a person did it already, it would not be prohibited.
So the pre-Torah is saying something very interesting. Even if someone wants to say that there's Mara Zion on these things nowadays, the halakh of Mara Zion doesn't apply in a case of extenuating circumstances. So what I would say to that is that someone asked me once about having food at lattes at Starbucks. They said it was problematic, and they asked Robert Belsky about this. They said it's problematic because there's a halakha called kleiakum. You have utensils of a non-Jewish person. So we say that we assume that the kalim are not kosher. In other words, the utensils were taken from a kitchen that they cook pork all the time in it, right? And you assume that they used it for pork in general. In this case, you could assume, for instance, if the case in Shulchan Aruch is someone passes someone selling nuts in the chestnuts roasting on open now chestnuts roasting on a closed fire, whatever, on a pan or something. So the Taz and the Shachan, everyone says that you could buy those nuts, even though you know for sure that it was a non-kosher pan. Because we assume, we say double doubt. One doubt is whether it's Basi Oma, it was not kosher last 24 hours. The other one is whether or not the food is going to taste good in front of the pot that goes into the chestnuts. Those things are doubtful, so it's a double doubt, and therefore one is allowed to eat the nuts. However, the halacha is only after the fact, after it was cooked, but you can't ask the person to cook the nuts for you. That's the difference. So the person asked Rebelsky, he says, you shouldn't be able to put the latte, ask for the latte, because the wand might not be kosher. And therefore, even if there's a fake circle, even if there's a double doubt, but still we say that you can't do it outright and ask for it. So I explained to that person that it's not so simple to say that, because there's many other reasons why the wand would be kosher. First of all, most of the food in Starbucks is kosher anyway. So chances that it can't be found on kosher food is very, very, very small. So that's an additional doubt, a huge doubt. Then another thing is that if it's washed in dishwasher, the soap in dishwasher, if you're afraid that the taste goes to a dishwasher, the soap will nullify any taste of non-kosher. Plus, whatever non-kosher food they put in a dishwasher is not substantive and we nullify it in the water. Et cetera, et cetera. So there's so many other factors involved over here that you can't tell me that this wand is not kosher. You're not asked outright. Only because you can't ask outright if you know for sure it was used for non-kosher food, and you're just not sure the status of the pot. And these are the only two factors. But if there's other factors involved, then there's really no issue. So I think the same thing with Marasan. Even if you say Marasan is a problem, but there's three Torah says that a person should do it only in case of concern. With a situation which is difficult, a situation which is extraordinary, then you can be lenient. But I always explain that whenever someone says that, the halacha is like the lenient opinion, because if you are allowing it when on extenuating circumstances, obviously it's allowed, because how can you allow it on such extenuating circumstances? So yes, you try to be stringent in the situation that where you can be. But if you can't be stringent, then it's permissible. That tells you that it's permissible, because otherwise you wouldn't be allowed to eat this or do this thing if it was problematic after the fact. Yeah.
Is that different than like we say, you know, you can't drive on Shabbos unless it's an emergency, then you have to bring somebody to the hospital, then you would. I mean, Why couldn't you extend that logic to that and say, well, then it must be okay to drive?
Because that's not a case of l'chachil v'diav. That's not a case of do it. This is a case where they say you should do it this way, and if you can't do it, you should do it another way. This is a special case in halacha, which is a case where you have piuch nefesh, for example. Piuch nefesh means that you're docha or you're. Where you push off the mitzvah. Shabbos actually is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to save someone's life. So that takes precedence over the other mitzvah. That doesn't mean it's allowed to do it under certain circumstances. Not allowed under certain circumstances. But this is a special case where you have another mitzvah that comes up against this mitzvah. So that case, that mitzvah wins out. But that doesn't get rid of that case. In that circumstance, the Torah says you have to do A, not B. But if it's not in that circumstance, the Torah says you're not allowed to do B. But this is not the same case. This is saying you're allowed to do it You're allowed to do it only if it's extenuating circumstances, but you can't do it. You can't do it regularly. So that there, the Ramah explains that that case is that it's really allowed, because otherwise that wouldn't be allowed in that circumstances. Extenuating circumstances is not a case of pikuach nefesh. It's a different case. This he says this is a case if someone's poor, doesn't have money, or has other issues involved that they can't do it because they're not able to fulfill the mitzvah. But it's not because there's another prohibition or another mitzvah that contradicts this mitzvah. And that's a different case. So the end of the day is that there are so many situational circumstances here that apply. For instance, that everyone knows about it, it doesn't apply to food, doesn't apply to the Gemara. All these examples that we gave, we see that these, even if the Pre-Torah says that it applies in outright, but we could add all these other factors to tell me. And that's why he said the Ramah says it only applies to an Issur Rabban. That's another factor. And he said only applies in a rabbinical prohibition. So even though our case is a biblical prohibition of pork, we see the Ramah says that the reason it applies only applies in the rabbinical prohibition because he says the prohibition is rabbinical. So therefore, that doesn't mean you're allowed to violate rabbinical prohibitions, but it does tell you that that this is a case where if it's a suffix, a double suffix, a double doubt, triple doubt, like in our case, we have numerous doubts whether this is a case of Maaseh Shayin or not. So it's a rabbinical prohibition, so therefore one could be lenient. And like I said, the Pre-Torah is trying to say the same type of thing, that it's allowed in extenuating circumstances. That tells you that it's really allowed, Mikra Din, it's really allowed. Because otherwise, how can you allow it in extenuating circumstances? And so if you add all these doubts to it, so even though you can't do it outright in his case, but in our case, because of the fact, like the Starbucks wand that is making a latte, there's so many other factors involved. So therefore, even according to Pre-Torah, would be allowed outright. Does that make sense? I don't know if I'm clear. Okay, that's end of our discussion. Anyone have any questions? Please feel free to ask.
One of the reasons that you are, forgive me if I'm misstating it, but liberal on the issue of kosher food, is you always say that you want it to make it easier for people to eat kosher, and that has its own rewards. I didn't read the OU's reasoning, but. They consider that at all? But this is another way of making kashrut palatable for people who otherwise.
Regarding what? Regarding the pork issue or the
pork,
general?
The pork issue.
Why would that make it easier if they don't make it kosher?
No, I'm saying they're making it harder. They're throwing another wrench in what otherwise would be a kosher food. Do they consider that at all? I mean, if you're considering mixed dancing in a restaurant. Why wouldn't you consider the opposite? Is why throw a wrench in when you don't need to throw a wrench in?
So you have to understand, the kosher agencies make the decisions. They try to make the decisions. They do make it a lot easier for people to cook kosher because there's so many. When I go to a vegan restaurant to give it a heksher, 90% of the food is a heksher on it, which is amazing. It's really, really helpful, very helpful. So they do make it easier for people to cook kosher. The problem is when you get to beyond that point, then there's another issue which they have to consider, which is business. The fact is, every heksher is a business. That's why I don't take money for the restaurants or anything like that, because I don't want it to be a business situation. If it's a business situation, you have to make decisions based on other factors. And this is really what it comes down to, that their consumers don't like the fact that pork doesn't have a heksher on it. So therefore, even though it's kosher, and even though they say it would be kosher, but they don't want their business to go down. And I heard this from many, many mashkichim and many different kosher agencies, basically said that, if we would go along with a lenient policy, we would go out of business. You know, for instance, there was one of the major agencies was giving a heksher on a certain type of lettuce, and the other agency was claiming that the lettuce has bugs. And they were fighting back and forth for a week, and then the lenient agency was relented and said, it's not kosher, you can't eat it. So numerous times this happened, a number of times, and I was told every time by Mashikim that they basically made a business decision that they wouldn't stay in business otherwise. So they justify that. So I understand where they're coming from. It is a business, and it is something that is beneficial for Jewish people. But unfortunately, that doesn't mean that they make the decisions based on what's right for the consumer all the time. They make decisions based on business many times. So one has to take that into consideration when evaluating this halacha, because basically if you understand this halacha, this decision by them to say, I'm not going to be hashered to impossible pork, you realize they think clearly it's a business decision. So that means you, when you make a halacha decision based on the facts, then you have to take that into consideration and realize that the halacha is no real issue.
There've been so many kinds of vegetarian bacon with hechsherim, so the whole thing kind of surprises me. So,
yeah, a lot of people say that.
Yeah, can you think of another example when they haven't given a hechsher to a food because of a similar reason like this? Or
good question. Offhand, I can't, but I'm sure there are some like that.
Like you said, there's lamb bacon, there's like veggie bacon, there's. You
know, so I did read.
Pork rinds.
Yeah,
there's the bacos.
One of the reasons they made the decision here is they expressed regret that they had done it. They said they get complaints all the time about it, and that influenced the decision.
I see. But they didn't make the decision to not give a hechsher before.
Right.
They gave it before.
Yeah. But now they decide to draw the line.
We regret having done it for the.
Oh,
they
I see.
Calls, I read that also, that they get calls to this day, they get calls, someone says, how could you possibly.
Can you imagine when there's a real halakhic issue when people scream? So they don't have it easy. Yeah.
Were there other like halakhot besides the one? Like, what were the halakhot that they cited in making the decision? Just the Mariyan issues, or
when you made it, they didn't quote halakhot. Yeah, they said
to not give it a hechsher.
They said it was like electricity.
No, that was the article. That was in the OU. The OU just said that because they got complaints from consumers. They did not give a halachic explanation. They said that halachically, they said the ingredients are kosher, and there's no reason not to give it a heksher. The only reason we don't give a heksher is because people are complaining. People would complain about the fact that pork, they don't like the idea of pork being kosher. So that's the only reason they didn't give a halachic reason. Stephen, you were saying something?
If they changed the name of the product, they would have hechshered it.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it wasn't a halacha question.
Are there any of those plant-based so-called meats that were actually based on maybe starting with an animal product and kind of cloning cells or anything like that? Is that a kosher problem?
100% good question. So this is an issue that's come up basically the different type of non-meat meats. I won't call them plant-based necessarily. They have plant-based clones also, but we're talking about cell-based clone. So that could be a problem. There's a difference of opinion. Originally, the OU said that it would be par if you have cell-based meat. So how do you treat the meat? Because not really from a slaughtered cow, but it's from a cell of one portion of the cow, and they turn it into meat. So that's very different than plant-based. Plant-based means it comes from totally from plants, but this is from a cell of an animal. So some would say it's not kosher. It's considered to be real meat because it's called tummy. Everything that comes from something not kosher is not kosher. So you could argue that this comes from something not kosher. It's like a child, so to speak, offspring, something like that of the cow, since it originally comes from a cow. And Rav Asher Weiss actually said he couldn't find a source in halacha to prove it, but he said meat is meat. That's what he used to say. It's meat. It's the same thing. It's no difference. So I hear that argument. I think it's wrong. That's why I'm hoping that everything that they produce is not from cells, from plant based. Because if it's plant based, then it won't be an issue. Yeah.
I've heard people say about the cell based that they run in the high, that it's from like, the
cell-based. Some say that. I think that's hard to say. I don't think there's a source for any halacha like this regarding even mechai, kashrus, basar. Yeah.
Before I'm feeling generous toward the OU in this case, though. I mean, he just may not, you know, why, who needs all this trouble? You know, I'm sure that they get so many, you know, they've gotten so many complaints, and, you know, they do what they do. I mean, it's like that. There are bigger problems in the world.
No, I agree with you.
I'm not going to fault them too much for this.
I agree with you. What you're saying, but the only thing I'll say is that you can't say it's not kosher. That's the only thing I'll argue. They don't have to give a hechsher, but you can't tell me it's not kosher.
Are they actually saying it's not kosher?
I don't know if they're saying it's not kosher, but if it doesn't have a hechsher, the implication is that you can't eat it. So I would tell you that you're right. I sympathize with them because I go through the same thing myself. I have to argue with people all the time about kosher. But so I sympathize with what they're going through, but that doesn't mean that the food's not kosher. That's the purpose of this class, actually.
Am I correct that the concept of heksher as a symbol, as opposed to the rabbi in your neighborhood saying you can eat at this place, is a relatively, like maybe a 20th century sort of innovation? I mean, the idea that there'd be some symbols, you know, I can't picture that in the 1600s you would go to the market and there'd be some sort of mark on the food.
So there is such a concept by meat. And some did by fish and some of the cheeses. There's a concept of a label of a seal, uh-huh. And they used to, in the times of the Gemara, they used to seal meat. The thing is, though, that put in all foods, different innovation. I always explain to people that there are four foods that really worry about heksher, which is meat and chicken, which is the same category, sometimes fish, wine sometimes, and cheese. Those four foods. But almost every other food, or just about every other food, really doesn't inherently need a heksher. The reason it doesn't need a heksher is because you need Jewish involvement or something of that sort. But or the many halachas, like meat is the many different halachas. But when it comes to any other food, which is sort of like an innovative thing that now they have a heksher in everything, it doesn't really need a heksher most things. You can go by ingredients based on the society we live in. And that's what they used to do in the early 1900s. They didn't have heksher back then. This is a mid-20th century invention, heksherim, having so many heksherim and everything. That's very convenient. It's not a bad thing. The problem I have is when people say that food without heksher isn't kosher. That's challenge people on. But whether it's convenient for us, it's fantastic. But there are upsides and downsides to everything. So there's no different than any other issue.
It's also more expensive.
Right, well, they call it the kosher tax, the Jewish kosher tax, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, the truth is, it's not a tax because they get so much more business. Seriously, Nabisco, when they went kosher, I think they increased their sales by their revenue by 7%.
That's because the OU has made it a standard. That suggests to a lot of people that they should not buy things that unless they're actual. So if that worked out in the first place and they went by your standard, which is the food is kosher, then people wouldn't have to. They would just buy it anyway. That's sort of the things that you say are just kosher anyway, like soda.
That's true. The question you have to ask, though, is if, from a business perspective, charge more money because of it, because if they make more business, they don't have to charge more money. So it's a win-win in many ways, yeah.
So can we have impossible pork?
What? So the conclusion of this class is that, in my opinion, impossible pork is kosher. So... That was kind of the point of class. Thank you for bringing that up.
The kashrut issue with those hard cheeses where the package says microbial enzymes.
So the problem with cheese is that hard cheese requires more than just ingredients to be kosher, according to most opinions. It really needs Jewish supervision or Jewish involvement. So I always tell people that if it's considered to be soft cheese, like cream cheese or farmer cheese or even mozzarella cheese, then that doesn't need a special heksher. That's why people ask me about tablet K. I think tablet K is okay regarding ingredients because the ingredients are kosher anyway without the tablet K. But if it's hard cheese, then it really needs a Jew to be involved in it, according to many opinions. I'd say everyone holds that way, but many opinions hold that way. Most opinions hold that way. And therefore, if a Jew wasn't in tablet K cheese, the Jew is not involved in it. I mean, they have to put in the rennet or supervise putting in the rennet. And that's not done. So therefore, that's why I make a distinction between hard cheese and soft cheese.
Is the Beyond Company going to make this too?
Beyond Pork? I'm sure they will. I didn't hear anything either.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The tablet K issue that we're getting off the topic now, but aren't there some hard cheeses with tablet K?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So, but you, what you were saying.
So,
if mozzarella, for example,
right,
with a tablet K,
we're kosher because it's considered to be soft cheese. Not everyone agrees to that. That's soft cheese, but I think it's.
You're saying a hard cheese with tablet K, you wouldn't.
Wouldn't necessarily recommend, though. It's not kosher. If someone uses it in their kitchen, I wouldn't say that anything happened to the utensils, but I would say that it's better not to. At least at this point in time, as far as my research has gone, it's better not to have hard cheese. Okay.
How does one square the idea that you're not supposed to add things to the idea that some people, you know, rely on humors, you know, like only by Call of Israel, even, you know, with other, that's the example that occurs to me, but you know, if you're not supposed to add, and if something is all right, why is it okay to be stricter?
So it's a good point. The difference, the distinction has to be made between an actual injunction and a chumra. Chumra is one thing. You like to keep chumras. Chumra means you're taking it upon yourself to do something strict. That's a very important distinction. People understand that. It's not. We're not allowed to do is add an injunction saying this is not. This is prohibited for everybody. That's an injunction. So for people to say which they do say nowadays, no one could do this. This is prohibited across the board. And it's, but if you say this is the practice of our community, this is my personal practice. That's a chumra. That's a stringency. That's permissible to do. Glock kosher, right? Glock kosher is a custom. It's actually a custom. It's stronger than just a chumra. It's a custom from Shulchan Aruch for many, many hundreds of years. We had this custom.
What is your opinion about giving? I have two different instances, and both of them have to do with Hebrew national dogs. So when I first became kosher, it was an Orthodox rabbi that I had heard was not trustworthy. And I asked, why don't we give him the benefit of the doubt? And people wouldn't give him the benefit of the doubt. I remember this clearly. I mean, it might not be true, but that's what I was told at the time. The people said it wasn't, you shouldn't eat it, because we don't want to give the benefit of the doubt. That's case number one. Case number two is now Hebrew National is Triangle K, which is a conservative.
No, it's not.
It's still an Orthodox.
It's an Orthodox.
What?
It used to be conservative, now it's Orthodox.
You're implying that it's kosher.
Yeah, I mean, the Triangle K is considered to be a controversial hechsher, but I happen to know the rabbi, I happen to know the operation there. I know when they went in, it took them 3 years to turn over the operation to make it kosher. Now, I know some of the shochtim for them, so they wouldn't be considered to be, by the yeshiva standards or Hasidic standards, to be proper shochtim, and on the level that they want them to be, but they're all, as far as I know, they're all Shomer Shabbos Jews, and they all keep halacha. And they are careful about a lot of things. There are differences in the kashrus, there's no question about it. As a matter of fact, one of the differences is glatt kosher, that most Triangle K meat is not glatt kosher. And there are other differences, but as far as, again, someone cooks it in their kitchen, I wouldn't say it's not kosher, and I wouldn't tell someone it's not allowed to eat it either. Because I think that the Rabbi Ralbag is a reliable person. Certainly on potato chips. People ask me about like other products that are not meat for Triangle K, that's certainly okay. They're very responsible people. The Rabbis are very responsible Jews, firm Jews.
So what about the first case where there are rumors that the person's not reliable? Should one ignore those rumors and give the person the benefit of the doubt and eat it? Or should one go the other way? If there are rumors, maybe it's true, I should avoid it.
So that's the same issue we discussed. It's choshev b'ksherim. Do you suspect someone who does something wrong? The problem is that this is affecting your food. So it's basically circumstantial. Depends on situational. Basically, if you look at the situation and say, you know what, this is a serious problem, I have to look into it. Then you should look into it. You shouldn't just buy it, trust the person blindly, because someone says something substantial. But on the other hand, people say things all the time to for business purposes, put other people down so that they prop themselves up. That's also, it's real, that goes around too. So this person can't be naive either way. They can't be naive thinking that the person's telling the truth for sure. It's like the Gemara says, Kabdeva Chashde, you have to respect everyone and suspect everyone. Right? You have to do both. You have to respect them. Persons don't believe the person, don't believe Lashon Hara on somebody else, but then you have to suspect. Maybe it's not kosher. I have to look into it. So I would say you shouldn't do either thing. Look more carefully, make sure it's right or wrong. And if you can't find out, then you're probably better off not eating it, but also not believing what they say.
This comes up, I know sometimes when I go to New York City, and there are lots of, like, other than the IKC, there are other little hechshers that, you know, certain vegan, non-Jewish vegan restaurants, you know, will have. And then if you go on the internet, which is an idiotic thing to do, but I do it, you know, you read all these things, oh, I would never trust them, you know. And you know, how do you look at, how do you, it's
if
one person can't look into it, and there's part of me that says I'd like to give people the benefit of the doubt, but I
think you have to look at, but that's the reason why part of why I do what I do, because I really, a lot of people ask me questions that they can't ask anybody else because there's no one out, no one really looks into these things. I try to look into these things just for the service of the community, service of people who want to know. But it's a tough question. I mean, that's the question I ask myself. That's why I look into it. I don't know every answer, but at least I try to look into whatever I can. But like a vegan restaurant, there's a lot of reasons why you can rely on even if you don't know about the hashtag. We spoke about that in some of our classes before. Anyone else, any other questions?
There's sort of like a deep irony in all of this that we don't do things or allow things because of the way it'll look, but we care so much about keeping these laws that we rely on the appearance of it as the justification in the first place. Like, if somebody served me like chicken parmesan, like I would know it's not actually cheese, right? But what I'm trying to say is like the fact that in this halacha you have to like put the almond milk out or put the almond milk, the almonds on the table to show that it's not cheese. Like I already knew that, and so to rely on it in this case seems like it just keeps going backwards in time almost. It seems or sort of backwards in the logical train.
So the Rama is talking about a case where you don't know that it's almonds. People would think it's really milk because they don't know about almond milk. It didn't exist back then. It wasn't common back then. Once it becomes common, then halacha doesn't apply anymore. You don't have to have almonds out. So people know. So you don't need to publicize it because people know. The case specifically is a case where someone's going to look at you and say, he's for sure eating milk and meat. Like, I know for sure. And so the almonds go, oh my God, I didn't realize. But nowadays, it wouldn't apply. That's why McDonald's would be a problem, perhaps. I don't think it would be, but even in Moshe's time, Moshe said it's a problem walking to McDonald's because, oh my God, he must be eating a shreif. But nowadays, no one ever think that.
Right, but I guess that's the sort of what I'm trying to say is that Moshe says don't go into McDonald's because someone will think you're eating treif, but
that wouldn't apply nowadays.
But that wouldn't apply nowadays. But also, like, it goes back to giving the benefit of the doubt. Like, if I saw someone that I knew that was from in a McDonald's, I wouldn't immediately be like, oh, they're eating treif. I guess it sort of goes to the Rambam's point of like giving people the benefit of the doubt. But there's a deep irony in trying to use the public appearance of something as justification, but caring so much about the public appearance that's the basis of not doing it.
So there's two different points over here. First of all, when someone does this action, whatever they're doing, so the fact is people are looking at them. This is called tolin. Tolin means that you have to hang on something. So for instance, if you have a rabbinical prohibition, and you're not sure whether it's one way or the other. If you can hang your hat on something, what's an example? Example would be like if two vats of non-kosher of chulin, put truma in one of them, and if it's truma derabanan, then we say that it went in the right one, because you can see, you don't know which one went into safek, you know which one it went into. If you as long as you could say that it went into the right one, then it's kosher. You hang your hat on something. So that's halacha here also. In other words, if someone sees you eating in McDonald's and they can't figure out how it's allowed. So the Rambam wouldn't say it's okay. Rambam says that you're not sure if he's doing good or doing bad. If he's doing bad, then in that case you have to judge him favorably because maybe he's doing good. But if you can't have any hat to hang on, that he's doing the right thing, then that's where there's a problem. So that's where basically what Moshe's saying. That can't happen, but it's very hard to. Very hard, like 90% he's eating a cheeseburger. Nowadays, there's about 10% chance he's eating a cheeseburger. So they have to rely on judge him favorably. So that's really, it depends on the circumstance in that situation also. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you, everyone, for coming.
Thank you.